Can construction and conservation coexist? Hong Kong is the fourth most densely populated city in the world, according to data from the World Bank. Since 1973, 9 new towns have been developed, currently housing 47% of the 7.27 million people living in the city. Still, over 270,000 families are on the waiting list for rental public housing, and a further 85,000 households are living in illegal subdivided units. With the population increasing at an average rate of 0.8% per annum and sky-high property prices, the Hong Kong government is racking its brains on how and where best to accommodate and provide facilities for the growing masses. It is just a matter of time before the government turns its sights on the 44,300 hectares of country park land for potential property development sites. It is not difficult to see why the country parks present an attractive solution to the pressing housing crisis. Legally protected natural reserves account for 40% of Hong Kong's territory. Proponents of development argue that keeping such a vast area vacant was a luxury. They claim that each person's visit to a country park costs Hong Kong at least 23,000 Hong Kong dollars a year. And considering the market value of the land, this social cost is just too high. As a country park land is already owned by the government, no land acquisition compensation will be required, and disputes are likely to be minimal. The cost and time saved can be passed on to the buyers. Moreover, the 9 new towns, including Sha Tin and Tai Po, were once built adjacent to the ecologically non-sensitive outskirts of country parks. Surely, the same model could be used for development in the fringes of country parks in the future. If we look at the actual figures, housing needs in the next 10 years can be accommodated in just 2-3% of the country park land. Is it not the logical answer? Is it not a relatively minor sacrifice to make? Before moving on to the benefits of country parks and free green spaces in an urban setting, using country park land for property development is the easy way out. Addressing Hong Kong's housing situation effectively requires a thorough analysis based on accurate data, free from groups with a vested interest. Dipping into the country park land might seem harmless initially. It would nevertheless mean changing the legal framework put in place in the 1970s when country parks were established. Once the floodgates are open, there is no way of telling how quickly the parkland will disappear, making the city truly a concrete jungle. About 11 million people visited Hong Kong's 24 country parks in 2014, recharging their batteries from the hustle and bustle of urban living. The parks also provide homes for a wealth of plants and animals that are native to the city. The Hong Kong bamboo, Romer's tree frog, and Hong Kong paradise fish. The Oxfam Trail Walker, a major fundraising sporting event in Hong Kong, takes place annually on the Macleose Trail, which stretches across several country parks. The event has attracted more than 81,000 participants since 1986, raising over 393 million Hong Kong dollars to support Oxfam's projects. "I try to come out here as often as I can," said Lisa Warren, an expatriate who's been living in Hong Kong for 7 years. She is a regular at the Sai Kung West Country Park. "I work long hours in a stressful job. It is invaluable for my sanity to escape the city for a couple of hours, walk among trees, listen to birds, and breathe some fresh air. I just hop on a bus from the MTR station. It is amazingly convenient. I do hope the government does not turn these lovely green gems into monstrous concrete carbuncles." Few cities in the world can claim such a high percentage of land area designated as country parks and special areas as Hong Kong's 40%. While the actual area is much larger, the U.S. only has 14% of its land designated as protected zones. There is growing evidence pointing to the restorative benefits of the natural environment for both physical and mental health. Research in the U.K. shows that people living within 500 meters of green space are likely to be almost 25% more active. The UK Public Health Service could save over £2 billion through increased activity in open green spaces. Proximity to green space has also been associated with lower levels of stress and reduced depression and anxiety. Surely, such benefits can be replicated in Hong Kong. It is common knowledge that trees absorb carbon dioxide, hold soil together, prevent flooding, and help control the climate. In Hong Kong, trees are vital in sustaining the city's water supply. The government began an extensive reforestation to reduce erosion and silting of reservoirs on Hong Kong Island in the late 19th century. When reservoirs were later built in the new territories, the existing woods were protected. The far-sighted idea is why the vast majority of the woodland is within country parks today. A UK government discussion paper noted that trees play a particularly important role in cities. In some parts of inner London, each tree is calculated to be worth as much as £78,000 in terms of its benefits. Can the housing situation in Hong Kong be resolved without encroaching on the precious parks? It has been suggested that developments can be considered in carefully selected fringe areas rather than in the heart of the country parks. These areas have the added benefit of being close to existing facilities and transport links. Researchers at LIBOR Research Community also pointed to the 1,201 hectares of public land currently reserved by the Hong Kong government for village-type development and suggested that these areas be considered for development first. Housing data and classification criteria suggest that the issue Hong Kong faces is not so much availability, but affordability. Pumping the market with parkside flats, which are likely to be in the luxury category, will not solve the problem. At least for now, the country parks can breathe a sigh of relief as the Hong Kong government stated that it had no plans to develop country parks into residential areas, and that it would focus on rezoning the 150 sites previously identified for residential purposes. Let's hope in time the government will not lose its grip on the situation and will better appreciate the notion that economic progress and environmental protection are not incompatible but in fact inseparable.